Welcome, Dr. James Beckett, Sports Card Insights. I want to thank my sponsors, Topps Panini, Upper Deck, Heritage Auctions, Huggins & Scott Auctions, Mike Stadium Sports Cards, Burbank Sports Cards, ComC.com, and Beckett Media, Beckett Grading, Beckett Authentication. So here's an episode for your listening enjoyment.
Going back to the big explosion of the 1980s, and we both watched new brands on the card manufacturing level come in. Now things have changed dramatically. Do you think it is a positive or a negative that there has been so much consolidation at the manufacturer level?
I can't do anything about it. Basically, it's going to turn into a positive if Fanatics does it right. But we have all our eggs in that basket. But in that basket are the players' associations. And that could be the saving grace there. They're already doing some things that no card companies were really able to pull off because of the equity partners they have there. That's the encouragement. That could turn it from a negative into a positive. And I don't like to think that they've got 20 years to figure it out, even though they may have a 20-year license. There's these next few years, they need to be building some momentum, not so they could print more cards, but they could draw more collectors in. That's the 10Xing I'm looking for. Not 10X pricing, but 10X involvement and positive energy in a category and a hobby that's wonderful. That ought to be a lifetime hobby. You start when you're a kid, you can end when you're sold, you can't see the cards anymore.
Okay.
Fanatics famously is saying they are going to 10X the hobby. Us two guys sitting here both did a 10X. In your regime at PSA, they 10X'd. In my regime at the Beckett entities, we 10X'd. And so we witnessed it, and it was a wild ride, and it was exciting. And we probably did more right things than wrong, but not everything. Do you have any advice for our friends at Fanatics about 10Xing? Because you didn't do it overnight. I didn't do it overnight, but you had a steady growth and you were doing things enough right that not only were you gaining new customers, you weren't losing the old customers as we were appropriate line extensions.
At the National this past year, which was the record-breaking National, beat the 1991 attendance record, I saw more young people there than at any show I had ever been to in my life. So many positives. It was incredible. But what I didn't like at the show is that there were a lot of new companies, and some of those new companies were making it all about the financial return. Quite literally, there was one display in particular where all of the glass display cases were filled with just fake $100 bills and one card in each case. And the message was clear. It was make money. That is not sustainable to me. The one piece of advice I would have for Fanatics, and I'm sure they'll 20X it based on their experience and their intelligence. But if you focus too much on the quote unquote hustle of card trading, in my opinion, that is not sustainable. You talked about the enthusiasm, the love, the passion. If you can base it more in that. Now, there's no doubt there's a monetary component to this.
Say we did it, but we weren't doing it for that reason. We weren't telling everybody, hey, if you do this, here's what you're going to get. We just kept putting out a good product.
And the money will come as a natural result of doing it the right way. And just, again, looking long-term, I love that there are so many young people involved. Again, watching that National was like a time warp for me, but it was bigger than it was 30 years ago in terms of young participation at the show. I would go to the hotel after the show and the halls are lined with 10 and 12-year-olds trading cards. It was amazing. But if it's all about the dollar, people will fall out of love with that as soon as they stop making money. But the reason we all stay with it, anyone who's been in the hobby for a long period of time, you don't win on every buy or every purchase. Sometimes you lose, but that's okay because you love it, the whole endeavor. The money part is a natural result of doing things the right way.
Okay, but I was not even open to going public. My concern is that Fanatics is probably going to go public in the next couple of years. You went from private to public, and there's different pressures on a company. So allay my fears, because Fanatics, when they go public, they're going to have quarterly earnings pressure, and so the almighty dollar could creep into their reasoning. How did you avoid that or steady the ship when you were doing that with PSA? Because it can be really difficult if you've got stockholders breathing down your neck.
When I started in the summer of 1999, we went public 3 months later in November. So I got there right before it happened, technically. Many years later, I became CEO of the publicly traded company, the Collectors Universe entity. And I guess one of the things I was able to do is be a sponge and observe. So I had five or six CEOs before me, and I was working there all along, and I got to see we had ups, we had downs, and just to observe and take in from their experience. Now, we probably had an advantage in the sense that we were so small.
You weren't that big.
We weren't that big. So we were public.
You're small for the stock exchanges.
Right.
But not for our hobby.
Exactly. But because we were so small, I don't think there was so much attention on us. And to be quite
frank, tracking,
that happened towards the end when we started to gain momentum. And there was a time where we were almost delisted in my early career. Our stock was down at $2. So for so long, we were a tiny public company. The pressure didn't start building until they started to see our success. So I was in the CEO seat for about 4 years or so. And we started to have some real success and our stock started to go up. And all of a sudden, we were getting more and more attention. So to your point, company the size of Fanatics went public today because they are much larger. We sold for a little over $850 million. Fanatics, they say, is already valued in the many billions of dollars. So it's a very different business. And I think the pressure and the scrutiny would be much greater because of their sheer size. What was the first card or cards you ever either bought or were given to you? What were the first ones?
I have said that Spook Jacobs 1956 Tops was the first card I got out of a penny pack. But let me answer it in this way, and that is I had collections given to me, and I don't even know why, but I remember buying cards a nickel at a time. I don't ever remember buying a whole box when I was 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12. But somehow there were some circumstances, and I wasn't a real pushy kid or anything. We moved a lot. But somehow I had some guys that gave me their dupes. Or at the end of the year, they say, anybody want these? And I'd say, yeah, I want them. And so I remember distinctly getting almost a complete set of 61 tops from my buddy. It's 1962. What do I need 61s for anymore? But those are the ones my mom threw away because they were extra and I didn't integrate them in with my collection. I was looking through them. She told me, put them away or I'm going to throw them out. But I had several instances where a kid that was collecting gave me some cards, not early 50s, but in the years that I was tracking, late 50s or early 60s. And I don't remember, did I do chores for them? Did I shine their shoes? I don't think so. But somehow I had more cards than I would have had nickels. And I was an expert flipper, so I'm sure I won some cards. But yeah, I think the way kids got cards and kids' collections changed hands in those days, they weren't perceived as worth anything if they were the previous year. That was last year's cards. They were going to throw them out. And I'd said, don't throw them out. I'll take them. And now look at me. I got the last layout.
That's right.
Fair enough. Good question, Joe. Okay, I think sometimes a duopoly is harder to challenge than a monopoly. When you're the monopoly, which PSA is almost a de facto monopoly now, everybody's shooting at you. Fanatics is going to be a near monopoly if they have their way. Everybody's going to be shooting at them. Coke and Pepsi, they've got to share the bullets. And so I'm wondering if some of these power structures that Fanatics needs a Pepsi or PSA, and SGC's been coming on strong, but they're a distant second. At our peak, I think we were a Batman and Robin, and we weren't the Batman back in the early 2000s, let's say. We were winning awards. We were innovating. I think you always had the volume, but we were doing great. Okay. And so that was nearing a duopoly, but I think a duopoly has strength that a monopoly doesn't. Monopolies get attacked by the government, by regulations. Everybody's saying it. So does that resonate with you?
Yes.
The Fanatics needs to think about that. The PSA needs to think about that. The Heritage is not a monopoly. Sotheby's and Christie's be another example. Okay. The fact that there's two of them, it's like people think that's formidable because if one doesn't get them, the other one's got to get them. I've got to defeat both of them.
So let's say I want to start a new rating service and I want to compete. Your position is it's actually harder to compete against if there's two strong people in the market, two strong brands. It's harder to do that than to go after the one. If I'm a new player,
I'd say duopoly, but in effect, if you go back 15 years, SGC was always very strong pre-war. Mm-hmm. PSA was very strong vintage. BGS had a really strong presence in the modern thicker cars for sure. Okay. There was an order to that and it made it difficult for other entrants to come in. But now PSA is near monopoly and all of a sudden you've got a whole bunch of people competing.
Yeah. I think it actually does open the door for a new player, whether it's in the manufacturing world or platforms world or in grading, because there's so much volume happening in one. And that's, gee, if we could just take 10%. Now, I know everyone thinks in every industry, right?
I know, yeah.
If I could only get 2% of the baby wipes business or something, then I'll be a billionaire. But I agree.
Mark Lurie did. Mark, it was the pit. And he was diapers.com. And now he's the owner of the T-Wolves.
There you go.
So like, I see diapers.
It happened. There it is. But I agree with you. If you have more than one strong player, whether it's two, whether it's three, whatever it is, you're right. You have to find a way. How do I fit in? Yeah, because each of them is going to have a shot. But a competition is generally good. It keeps people creative and innovative as long as these companies that are becoming dominant, they have their hearts in the right place and they're doing things the right way and stay innovative and creative, then we're okay. Is there in the hobby one particular category you think hasn't had its day yet and has the best chance of, I don't want to focus strictly on dollar value, but just getting more participation in the next 5 to 10 years?
I think Fanatics is going to do this. Anybody could do it, but they could maybe do it better. They've got the marketing muscle and the connections. And that is music and celebrity and entertainment. Because I was thinking the other day, there used to be stamp collectors. They don't eat stamps. They love stamps, but stamps are eclectic and stamps are archaic now. You've got coin collectors. Now, coin collectors are huge, but that's precious metals too. But they don't eat the metal. They love the gold or the silver, but that's that. But sports and music are participatory. Enjoying, you watch, you listen, you talk about it, any of these celebrity entertainment figures. And so to have their autograph, you can't get a coins autograph, you can't get a stamps autograph. I think that has real room to grow. Every one of these reality shows, there could be card-like elements. There probably already are in some sense, but to structure it, because I still believe you have to acknowledge the quote-unquote complete set aspect of collecting. That there is a set, you don't have to collect it, but you could collect it. They're numbered from 1 to 1,000, maybe. So you're probably not going to try to get the whole set, but they're catalogable. And if that's great musicians or great actors and actresses, anything that has a following, and to get game used autographs, as well as experiences. That's another part of this. Is I think anything that can, they do a first day of issue, you could get a first day of going to the movies or front row of the concert insert in there. If you really were in tight with the celebrity, with the musician, with the group, with the actor, I think that's going to 10X. Because music and sports don't necessarily go together. But if you say, I'm going out with my wife, or I'm going out with some buddies, might be to a bar or something, but it's more likely to be a movie or a concert, or a ball game. So then you have promotional venues for sports and entertainment. Every movie could have a trailer that says, hey, by the way, we got a card set that helps you know more about the actors and actresses, and every 10th pack's got an autograph in it. And there's an active secondary market for it. I'd love to see something like that. I think that's the 10X. I'm on the record saying baseball cards, you're not going to 10X. The base is too high. Basketball cards already 10X'd. In fact, they 10X'd probably too fast. Football has got growing pains. Hockey doesn't want a 10X. I love those Canadians. They do it the way it ought to be done, but they're a throwback. Entertainment, I think Fanatics can jump into that big.
At the Heritage offices here in Dallas, when we set up our gallery.
And you get the buzz.
Exactly. When we have our gallery set up, because they rotate anytime there's a new auction, and we have the movie props, the rock and roll memorabilia, the costumes from TV show. People walk through there and that nostalgia is so powerful. And it really reminds me of sports in terms of that connection to those things. So there's no doubt there's opportunity there. It's the structure.
It's more powerful than sports, but it's broader.
Mm-hmm.
And the reach is more. You've got way more women. You got all kinds of demographics. So I think out of 100 random people, 10 of them are going to be really excited about baseball. 50 of them are going to be excited about music and movies and stuff like that.
Yeah, if you go to a barbecue and you just strike up a conversation, you might talk about the game last night or a great movie that you just saw. Yeah, experience-based things that we share as humans with one another. And so you use the word structure. If there's any way Fanatics or anyone else could create more structure around that market, the stuff would be worth so much more. We talk about it at Heritage all the time. The stuff should be worth more because of the impact it has on the culture. But there's not enough structure in the hobby, in the market to give people peace of mind. You talked about set collecting, a target, something to work towards. If I'm right there with you.